Let's start with what I think is the lead geopolitical story of the week, and it's one that's been underreported in American media. Turkey, Saudi Arabia, and Pakistan formalized a defense pact last week in Mecca, and as of this morning, Turkey's defense ministry confirmed the institutional structure they're building underneath it. Defense ministers, foreign ministers, and military chiefs will coordinate through a standing trilateral mechanism. That's not a joint statement. That's architecture. When you build inter-ministry coordination bodies with chiefs of staff involvement, you're creating something that generates its own momentum, its own bureaucratic gravity. Decisions get made at those tables that don't always get reviewed at the head of state level.
And the geography of this alignment is what strikes me first. You have Turkey, a NATO member, sitting at the center of a military pact with Saudi Arabia and Pakistan, the latter being a nuclear-armed state that has historically maintained strategic ambiguity between the U.S. and China. That's a genuinely novel configuration. Turkey has flirted with parallel alignments before. The S-400 purchase from Russia was the most dramatic example. But this is a different order of commitment. What makes it particularly significant is the defense industry cooperation angle. Ankara has spent the last decade building a serious domestic arms export industry, with the Bayraktar TB2 drone becoming something of a symbol of Turkish hard power projection. If that technology starts flowing to Saudi Arabia and Pakistan under a formal industrial cooperation framework, you're looking at a meaningful regional capability transfer.
The Saudis are fascinating in this context. They've been on an explicit multi-alignment strategy since roughly 2023, simultaneously engaging China through the Belt and Road, maintaining the Abraham Accords architecture with Israel, and now signing a formal military pact with Turkey and Pakistan. The Saudi leadership has clearly decided that exclusive dependence on any single patron, and historically that was Washington, is a vulnerability they are no longer willing to accept. Pakistan's inclusion is the piece that carries the most long-term weight, in my view. Islamabad has nuclear weapons, it has a large military that has real combat experience, and it sits at the intersection of South Asia, Central Asia, and the Gulf. If this alliance develops any kind of operational depth, it becomes relevant to a much wider set of scenarios than just the Middle East.
The question I keep coming back to is how Washington reads this. The Biden administration would have responded with intensive diplomatic outreach immediately. The current administration's posture toward Turkey has been inconsistent. Erdogan gets treated simultaneously as a problematic NATO ally and a potential partner on various bilateral issues. There's no clear doctrine for what happens when a NATO member formalizes military coordination with a near-nuclear non-NATO state. And let me add the Iran dimension, because you can't look at a Saudi-Turkish-Pakistani pact without asking what threat picture it's responding to. For Riyadh, Iran is the obvious answer. For Ankara, it's more complicated. Turkey maintains trade relations with Tehran. Pakistan's relationship with Iran is tense, but not overtly hostile. So the alliance has multiple threat orientations simultaneously, which historically makes these arrangements harder to operationalize, but also broader in their deterrent appeal.
The Mecca location for the signing matters symbolically, too. This isn't a conference room in Geneva or a NATO headquarters in Brussels. It's the holiest city in Islam. The signatories are projecting that this is an Islamic world security arrangement, which carries a particular message both internally, to their own populations, and externally, to audiences across the Muslim world who might see this as an alternative to Western-led security frameworks.